We spend more education dollars outside of the classroom than almost any state in the country. You know, for good reasons. Every town does their own thing. They all have their superintendents and deputy superintendents and purchasing and IT. And everybody replicates that 169 times. So one of the things we're trying to look at is not just how much more money we put into education, but how we can make sure that money goes to the classroom and not overhead.
This is something that Governor Lamont is very passionate about, which is education funding. And he wants to know just how much money do we really need to. This kind of goes back to ECS, the funding formula, which, again, was not adjusted this year. There was a lot of money that was invested for education aid and municipal aid. But it is a Band-Aid on something that needs major surgery. But before we fix the ECS formula, the governor feels like we need a team. We need a team of people who are really invested in financial responsibility, but also education needs. And so that's exactly what was created, the Blue Ribbon Commission. And actually a member of that team, first of all, I'm excited for this. I'm hopeful for this, but I also really want to see something come out of this. I don't want this to be another Blue Ribbon Commission where you see a group of people come together. It's not that they don't care about it, but we don't actually see solutions happen, and then you don't see actual laws passed and you don't see major changes made. I feel differently about this group. I'm hoping that I've got the right gut feeling about this. But I want to stay in touch with the Blue Ribbon Commission. And some of the members of this team have direct connections to us here on WICC and the towns and cities that listen to us each and every day, including State Representative Tina Corpus. Now, Representative Corpus it was announced, actually, I should say, that she was going to be appointed to this team. Again, this is the Commission on K-12 Education Funding and Accountability. But I wanted her to first share why she was picked to be on this, which I think is a huge honor. She's in her first term serving the 149th Assembly District, which, again, represents Greenwich and Stamford. And she joins us back on the show. Representative Corpus, thank you and welcome. Why were you chosen to be part of this team?
Thanks so much for having me, Melissa. I really appreciate it. You teed up the purpose of this commission very, very well in both the governor's remarks and your own gut feelings and takeaways. So I was appointed, and I'm very greatly honored to be appointed by Vin Candelora, the minority leader, who had an appointment for this commission, because the commission requires, some knowledge and deep dive into education, but it really is about the funding. So, I worked on Wall Street for 20 years. I am a finance person. I'm on the Appropriations Committee. I'm a numbers person. And we're going to get in the weeds here about how other states fund education, what models are out there that are the best practices, are we doing it the right way, et cetera. So I think it's really the nexus of education and finance that speaks to my background the most.
So, Representative Corpus, I would love to understand exactly what the on face value what the goal is for this group. And my understanding is you guys have to put forward kind of solutions or at least your recommendations in January of 2027, which is no coincidence. It's before the next legislative session, in hopes that some concrete legislation gets passed or major adjustments get done. But how do you break that down? Like, what exactly are you looking for, and how are you finding efficiencies or deficiencies, I should even say? You know, how does this all work between now and January of 27?
Well, it's, given the magnitude of the question, it's actually a short time frame, but I really like that it's a short time frame because I think that work expansive at the time, and I think we really could get something done here. In the legislative session, things move so fast, and you don't have the presence of mind a lot of times to dig deep into some of these bigger issues and really see what other states are doing. And so I think that is a really good opportunity. Plus, I have to tell you, even though I've only been here one session, in some of these more heavy lifts, you really need some horsepower in terms of who is going to be churning the numbers, who is going to be doing the heavy lifting. And the Columbia Research Institute is stapled to this commission. And I have to tell you, we've had one meeting, and the materials they have turned out and their willingness to really dig in and do some hard work, I think is really going to help the commission. That and the fact that the governor has his attention on it. In other words, I don't think this is going to languish at all, how some of the, to be quite honest, legislative commissions may do.
Really?
Yes.
Because, facts are power or because you've got kind of an outside source? Because I did notice that. So for the record, for people who are listening right now, you can actually go and watch it. It's over 2 hours that they had their first meeting last week. And I noticed that the chair of this commission did talk about this group that you just referenced before. Where do they come from?
They are, I have the materials right in front of me. They are the Columbia, there's an acronym for it. It's essentially a Columbia CPRL, the Columbia Policy Research Initiative, for lack of a better word for that last acronym, and Educational Resource Strategies. So you've got a consulting firm, and you've got essentially a think tank on education issues behind this and powering this. And I've got to tell you, after the first meeting, you could tell, because the quality of the data they produced really gave you a picture of what we're doing in Connecticut, and already put down in writing a couple of data points about how other states are doing this. So I must tell you that as we sit here, I'm very optimistic. That and the fact that the executive branch is putting attention and horsepower on this. Mm-hmm. The Education Commissioner Russell Tucker was there the entire time. The governor kicked off the meeting. There's a really good variety of stakeholders. So I'm optimistic.
And again, we have Representative Corpus here, who is one of the members of this Blue Ribbon Commission on K-12 Education Funding and Accountability. You're so right. We're talking about a matter of months. We're not even giving this a year's time. So what I'm curious about, and I know I'd asked the governor about this recently when he was on my show, but he said you got to kind of ask them how they're going to do it, which is why I'm so grateful you're here. And I would love to kind of keep checking in on the commission. I know Kate Diaz is also on it from the CEA. Yep. She's come on the show as well. But if we're not looking at, my understanding from the governor is, we're not looking at all 169 municipalities, like basically their school budgets. What are they investing in? We're sort of looking at more of a blanketed, or feel free to kind of fix what I'm saying. But when I was asking the governor about this, he's like, no, we don't have the time or really even like the means per se to look at all 169 municipalities, how they do their school budgets to find deficiencies. How are we doing that then?
Well, we're looking at it more from a state level, macro level.
Okay.
So it's, the main engine for funding from the state to the 169 municipalities of the state of Connecticut, the main engine for funding is the Educational Cost Sharing Formula, ECS. Mm-hmm. So what is that? That's basically, the crux of how state money gets to our municipalities. And it's a particular point of view on doing that. And part of the commission, this Blue Ribbon Commission's job, is to say, is that the right way to even think about this? So what ECS does is it says, town of Greenwich, measures how many kids are in the seats on October 1st of any given school year, so, a month into the school year, and says, if there are 100 kids in the seats, then each of those kids gets $11,525 per child, gets sent. That the beginning of the formula is each district gets the number of kids times that dollar amount. Then if there are children who are English language learners, that number is topped up per student. If there are children who are from disadvantaged backgrounds and are eligible for free lunch, that number gets topped up for those children. And then finally, if the district has a concentration of underserved children, then it gets another top-up. So now you've got a new number per child for each district. Then you take that number and you put it through sort of another kind of Oregon grinder formula, and that is based on looking at the entire state, which municipalities have the highest need. So what you end up there is, like, very significant. I learned this week in our first meeting, significant variability. I didn't know the extent of it, of how different districts get funded. So, for example, the town of Fairfield gets about 3% of their school budget from federal and state monies and 97% of their school budget from local property taxes. Contrasted with, this was provided in the materials they sent us, contrasted with the city of Bridgeport, 75% of their school budget comes from state and federal sources, whereas 25% of their budget comes from local property taxes. It's an approach. Part of this commission is saying, is that the right approach? How do different states do this? So that's a really big question, and that's sort of the backbone of how the state funds education in Connecticut. Is the state putting enough money in? Is there too much reliance on local property taxes? And then for me, the biggest question is, you know, let's not just, I'm not suggesting we do this, but let's not just throw money at problems. You know,
right.
What are we getting for that money?
Right. And that's it. Like, what are we actually getting for that money? And are we addressing it at, you know, at the best way we possibly can, essentially? Representative Karpus is here. She is one of the members of the Blue Ribbon Commission on K-12 Education Funding and Accountability. This is something we are tracking very closely on my show, because in the beginning of January, this group is going to put forward recommendations, and hopefully it leads to some solutions, or at least adjusting the ECS formula, because it, first of all, hasn't been adjusted in over a decade. But also, we know that we have more problems than we have solutions at this point to make sure that kids are getting the support that they need at the education level. So you had said before, Representative Karpus, that there's a lot of variability to determine how school districts get state and federal resources, money, which makes an awful lot of sense. The thing that I guess gives me pause, and the reason I kept saying, well, do you look at all 169 municipalities and kind of compare and contrast and see if we're spending money appropriately, is because the governor keeps saying we're top heavy. But what you just said, which made an awful lot of sense, is that we determine how much money every city and town is getting based on that variability of the student, what the student is looking at. Do they need help with language? Do they need help with food? I mean, so you outlined it really nicely. I won't go back over it. But where does the top heavy leadership part come into play? Because that, to me, would be a municipality, like, district-to-district decision. If they want to have four administrators in the superintendent's office versus two, and those salaries being a big reason why their education budgets are so tight.
Yeah, I don't know what the governor means when he says that we're top-heavy.
But you've heard him say that, right? I'm not crazy. Like, he's called it that.
I did not hear that in the meeting, but I'm sure he has said that. No, of course, you're not crazy. But what I can tell you, which is very, very interesting, is that, and I'm really happy to hear the governor say this, because this is one of my, you know, sound like a broken record on this topic on the Education Committee and on appropriations. You know, what are the school districts that are getting the biggest bang for their buck doing right? And, you know, they're the macro questions of this commission, such as the formula, and can we really take a blank canvas and rewrite the formula if we need to? They're the macro questions. But they're also sort of the micro questions. Like, this was a fascinating piece of data that came out of this meeting. You know, who is spending the most per pupil in Connecticut's 169 districts? On the top end, you've got small towns, you know, really small towns that are trying to produce a high-quality high school education for their students, but simply have fewer students across which to spread those costs. And then at the low end of how much per pupil are the low-end district spending, I thought it fascinating that the Stanford Charter School for Excellence is the absolute least per pupil, $11,837 per pupil, and they're getting the top, if not among the top, results in the state. So
really?
Yes. And
that is fascinating.
It is. And I would love to, in addition to the macro questions, come out of this with small or smaller achievable goals. What are they doing? What are they doing with their administrative or overhead costs? How are they organizing their classrooms? Can we quickly import some of those practices to the schools that are struggling and get more bang for our buck? Because that is an excellent school, and they are dead last as far as spending per pupil, but certainly not dead last in terms of achievement.
I mean, that really is a tale of two cities. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, after that meeting, if I were to hear that, I'm not to put that on you, but I mean, only because they fall under your district. Did you call them by any chance? I would love to hear how they're doing that. I mean, that's more than a quick text message conversation, but that's fascinating to me.
I know them well. And in fact, right after that meeting, I got together with some colleagues that were in attendance and on the commission. And we've decided, you know, we need to do a back to school field trip here. I would really love to see some of these schools up close and personal, like the other one. The other school that was here in the very, very low end of spending per pupil, Capital Preparatory Harbor School District, they're an enormously high achieving with children from disadvantaged backgrounds, school. I would just love to see what they're doing right. So long story short, for purposes of your listeners, you know, I'd like us to take the macro view, but we've also got to get I would like to come out with some practical, achievable goals where we can help schools right away on some things that the great achieving schools are doing for less money.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you do end up going on that field trip, I'd love to go with you because I just think this is fascinating. Right. I would love to go with you. And obviously, just as a spectator, I certainly won't pepper anybody with questions, even though that is in my nature. But I certainly would love to see that as well, because like that to me is probably not to say that our whole conversation wasn't fascinating. That factoid you just shared is unbelievable. Like, that's amazing.
It is amazing. And it's not just because they're a charter school. There are other, you know, fully public schools who are doing a fantastic job, too, with fewer resources. And it's not a matter of good management or mismanagement. I'm not suggesting that. It may be something structural in administrators to teachers ratio. How are they organizing, homeroom classes relative to specials? It's just, all of those questions are really worth looking at a more macro level, because, you know, we can't dig into and micromanage how every school district is doing their job, but it's only the state that can have the meta view and see the forest for the trees and help the districts learn from each other. They're already doing this, but from a financial perspective, I think that's part of the work of this commission too.
Well, and you also never know, Representative Corpus, which always gave me pause. You never know if something is archaic. I mean, when you think about the fact that the ECS formula has not been adjusted in 13 years. That was a totally different world even 13 years ago. You know what I mean? So it's like even just what was a priority a decade ago may not even be of existence now, but we're still investing in it. You know what I mean? Like I don't know how. I'm just fascinated by this. This has become a passion project for me. I'm not on the commission, nor should I be. I'm not qualified, but I'm so fascinated about what is coming out of these meetings and what it could mean for education funding. I really am.
It's a very important topic, and yes, I don't think, and maybe this is what, the governor said this, and I very much appreciated this in his opening remarks. We haven't done enough. The fact that base amount, that foundational amount, has not changed since 2013, anyone can conclude is insufficient. But we have very interesting trends going on, too. Another thing that was brought to bear in the first meeting was that public school enrollment has fallen 6.2% in Connecticut between 2018 and 2026. So how do you handle that? That's a function of demographics. It's mostly a function of demographics. It's kind of happening at the national level. The other thing that is interesting is the percentage of students who are free and reduced price meals has gone up. English language learners has gone up, and students with disabilities has gone up. And those students require more support. So when you have 44% of Connecticut's children on free and reduced price meals, which is the current number, that all has to play into how you fund education. On the one hand, the total pie is shrinking. On the other hand, the students that need the most support are increasing. So we've got to factor that in. The other thing that I care deeply about is special education. You know, I was a ranking member of the Select Committee on Special Ed, which passed a reform bill in 2025. But the work there is obviously not done either. You know, what is the best way to guarantee every child a free and appropriate public education and support them to their fullest potential? How do we do that in the face of increasing costs for special education, increasing numbers of children who need those services, and the fact that towns really struggle with this question? Because if you are a Fairfield, if you are a Fairfield, Connecticut, and 97% of your school budget is coming from property taxes, and you're facing these increased cost trends, you know, you can't grow that tree to the sky on your citizens in the form of property taxes. So all of those things have got to go into these discussions as well.
Yeah, well, and the discussions will continue, and we are going to track them as well here on WICC. Representative Corpus, thank you so much. Again, a member of the Blue Ribbon Commission on K-12 Education Funding and Accountability. Their first meeting that happened just last week. Thank you for an inside look and for helping break down what exactly you guys are tasked with and what we can expect in January of 2027. Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate your time. And by the way, for you at home, I'm going to link actually the video just showing the over 2-hour meeting. meeting. If you want to watch it, see the other members, see some of the data that Representative Corpus just talked about, you can find that online. I'm going to put it on our website, voiceofct.com.